Crispin here on the North Shore Vineyard Church audio podcast. Today on the podcast, we have a message from a special guest, Doug Anderson, a really good friend of ours who works with the National Vineyard Office as the coordinator, national coordinator. He's also on the board of directors of our church, so, and just an all-around good guy. Glad to have him in for to speak, give me a break on the Sunday message. This message, he's talking about Jesus the Seeker, and this is a great talk. Oftentimes we think about people seeking Jesus, but Doug's going to look at the subject of Jesus, the one who seeks out to save those who are lost. Great message. That's about all I got to say. Let's go ahead and head to downtown Covington to North Shore Vineyard Church for the talk. Thanks for listening. Follow us on the web at northshorevineyard.org.
You know, since I work in the national office of the Vineyard. I pastored a church in Clear Lake for 20 years, which is a suburb of Houston. And long story, I ended up working on staff at our national office. I serve as what they call the national coordinator, which nobody knows what that is, including me. But I work for our national director and kind of do everything he doesn't want to do. That's pretty much kind of the way it is, but. But it is a good vantage point of seeing everything that's going on in the Vineyard. And so I'm not sure how much you guys are in tune with some of the things that are happening in our larger community of churches, but it's a real interesting time, probably one of the more interesting times that we've had in our short history. But we're right in the process of selecting a new national director, my boss, intentionally for the first time. Now, we've had a couple national directors over our years, but it's always been because somebody passed away or some other crisis, and so it's kind of like, how do we... And so this is the first time we actually have sought the Lord of how is it that we would select in our, you know, in the Vineyard with our way of doing things, somebody to lead us. And so we're right in the middle of this process. And so I would encourage you to pray because I believe God's chosen someone. It's just a matter of us, you know, getting his mind in it and discovering that. So by the end of September this year, we'll know who the new national director is, even though they won't take office until January 2013. There'll be a long transition time. Also, there's an emerging new vision in the Vineyard to plant between 750 and 1,000 new churches in the next 10 years, and that's pretty exciting, seeing, you know, how God will do that. And all this is kind of centered around these five core values that we cherish in the Vineyard, which probably there's some literature around here somewhere. You can go to our website and check those out. And then all that focused on what is a very simply stated mission that we have of reaching the unreached. And, you know, this is more than just a cliche kind of sloganeering kind of thing. Have you been in those or seen those things where we come up with this big scheme and this plan and we put a name on it and, you know, we kind of pump it up and all that kind of stuff? That's not what this is. We actually believe that and see this, reaching the unreached, as the mission of Jesus that we're getting in on. It's not something that we came up with and are asking him to bless. I was at a gathering of some business people a couple months ago. You know, these are like CEOs of companies and stuff like that. It wasn't a Christian meeting. And, you know, it was a kind of a smaller setting, round table. And so we go around and introduce ourselves. And it came to me, and I knew I was kind of different from a lot of the other people. And so I talked about what I did, and I talked about the Vineyard. And so... you know, people started asking questions. Well, what is this Vineyard? What is this kind of thing? And in the moment, I was trying, how do you explain this, you know? And I said, well, it's kind of like church for people who don't like church. You know, it's, and the truth is there's a lot of people around where we live who, for whatever reason, the church just hasn't connected with. or they haven't connected with the church. And so we believe that God has called us to try to connect with some of those that aren't connecting for whatever reason. It's not like we're elite or special or anything like that. I think it's just part of the calling that God has given to us. And so for this to happen, you know, obviously Jesus needs to be the center of the vineyard. That's probably a good thing. And like I said a while ago, we're not really asking him to join our cause. That's a mistake we make a lot of times, kind of like, you know, we're going to go do this and that. Jesus, will you bless it? No, we've actually been commissioned by Jesus in his mission. He's not for us or against us. We're for him and what he's doing. And so, you know, I think today there's too many churches or organizations that have these grand schemes and plans and doctrines or whatever the latest church fad is. And quite frankly, a lot of times Jesus is incidental to all of that, if he's there at all. And as far as that goes, too often I think we've substituted Jesus right out of our gospel and replaced it with other things, and with our pet doctrines or maybe our sentimental explanations of heaven or whatever it is that we do. We make the good news something that may be more palatable or more fitting, and we wake up one day and go, where did Jesus go? Out of the gospel. How many of you have been following Jesus for a long time? Do you remember what it was like when you first experienced the love of Jesus? I mean, is it still fresh in your heart? Or are you kind of like me, over time, you wake up one day and realize that you've been slowly replacing that relationship with him with other things to take his place for whatever reason. It's easier, you know, you don't have to keep up with things or whatever. And then one day you wake up and go, whatever happened to that sweet, fresh love of Jesus and that relationship that we had? This is something that's really been working in my heart lately. Just thinking about how much of what I do and what we do is centered around Jesus. I love that we did that song this morning, Jesus be the center. Be the wind in my sails. It's kind of funny, I was thinking about that as we were singing it. What we end up doing is developing these elaborate rowing schemes or something else so that we don't have to depend on Jesus to, you know, give us the energy we need. But we lose so much when we do that. There's been like three questions that have been haunting me in a good way lately. One is, where is Jesus in the church? Is our way of doing church, can we do it without him? Have we been doing it without him? Is he absolutely crucial to how we do church? Do we need him to do how we do church? Another one is, where is Jesus in the gospel? You know, I mentioned that. You know, is our good news, this message that we proclaim, is it centered around Jesus, and does it even need him? Because there's a lot of stuff out there that we're calling the gospel that, you know, like I said, it doesn't really need Jesus. You know, kind of, if you just have a positive attitude about life, you know, things will be going good, and you know, that's our message. Or, you know, there's just a million ones out there. If you'll just prosper, but the good news doesn't have anything to do with Jesus. And so, you know, this question's been haunting me. Is the good news we share possible without Jesus? Can we do it without him? If so, it's not really the good news and the gospel that Jesus came to share. And the third one is, where is Jesus in our mission? You know, do our visions and our plans and our schemes only require Jesus? And maybe more importantly, are they his mission or are they ours? Are we really in touch with what his mission is and we're getting in on it, or are we making these plans? And you think about that, about the North Shore Vineyard here. You know, you guys, I know Crispin's been sharing a lot of vision. But I know Crispin and Dean, I know their heart. This isn't like, hey, let's go start something really big on the North Shore. You know, in Hammond back in the day in the 70s, We didn't go there with some grand. We could have never envisioned the things that were happening. I mean, I wish we could take the rest of the morning and just tell stories. It was so awesome, the things that would happen. Why? Because Jesus was doing this. It was his plan. And we happened to tap into it and get in on it. And, man, it's a whole lot of fun. And that's one of the high values of the Vineyard, is do what we see the Father doing. That's the secret to ministry that John Wimber used to. He used to, it makes you look good. You know, when God's doing something, then you jump in on it. Makes it look like we know what we're doing, right? But he's doing it. So today, what I want to share is I just want to focus on this mission, the stated mission of the Vineyard, reaching the unreached. And I specifically want to kind of have us together ask the question, where is Jesus in this mission? You know, does it require him? Is it his mission? Can we do it without him? And there's just a lot of places in the Bible that we could go to look at, well, what was the mission of Jesus? What was his stated mission? But I want to zero in on one story that I think captures it so well and represents all of the different places that Jesus stated his mission. And it's the story of Zacchaeus. Now, how many of you grew up hearing and learning about Zacchaeus? Anybody never heard of Zacchaeus? Awesome. Yes. Well, this is what we need to know about Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus was a wee little man. A wee little man was he. Now, for those of you that don't know who Zacchaeus is, that's what we grew up learning, this little song, you know. But, you know, when you really look at this story afresh, and I invite all of you that are familiar with this story, let's unpack it, let's listen to it like it's the first time we ever heard it this morning. And it really isn't a message about Jesus loves short people. That's not what this is about. I mean, he does love short people, but I don't think that's what this story is about. So let's take a look at it. Let's read it. We see this in the 19th chapter of Luke. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. And he wanted to see who Jesus was, but being a short man, he could not because of the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. Now, when Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. Now, all the people saw this and began to mutter, "He has gone to be the guest of a sinner." But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor. And if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount." And so Jesus said to him, "Today, salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham." And then he ends by stating his mission. "For the Son of Man came to seek and to save what was lost." Very clearly stated. Now, those of us who grew up in the church, or grew up reading the Bible, we hear that, "For the Son of Man came to seek and to save that which was lost." We think, yeah, that makes sense. Jesus came to seek and save the lost. But let's kind of try to hear that from the perspective of those that heard that for the first time, because this would have been something that just totally blew their mind. It would have been a category that they did not have. Why was this statement that Jesus ended the story with so radical at the time? Well, let's think about it. Who was he talking to? Primarily the Jews in Palestine. And there was an emerging kind of a belief that Jesus might be the Messiah that the Old Testament talked about. And so what would they think if he was the Messiah that his mission would be? Any good Jew would think, if he's the Messiah, he's come to restore Israel to its former greatness, its former glory, and to reinstitute the throne of David, King David, or the in Jerusalem, and to once again be this great nation. That's what they're looking to the Messiah for. But then Jesus says, "No, I've come to seek and save that which was lost." It's like, what? People that have that have run away from the faith, people that, you know, are lost. That's not what the Messiah is coming for. So it would have just been kind of like, what? And they're going to hang out with, he came and hung out with the sinner and said that's why he came. It would just really be confusing. So as we unpack the story, I'm going to look at it from the perspective of those that heard it for the first time and why it was so radical. And I just want to honestly, I'm just sharing with you this morning things that this story is speaking to me. And maybe they're speaking to you these same things, or maybe there's other things that this is speaking to you. I invite you to explore it that way, but I'm going to kind of share my stuff as we go through. And the first thing is this thing we were just talking about, is that Jesus in this story revealed the new and radical notion that God was actually seeking out sinners. Now, this is just a wild concept. It wasn't intuitive to them. Because the reason is because God, the God of the Old Testament that they would be familiar with was a God to be sought after. You know, if you did it this way and for this long, and if you killed this thing and burn it up, and if you know, all these very precise procedures, then you might find God. But even then, it would be at a distance and through a mediator and this type of thing. And then during the time between the Old Testament and the New Testament, you know, where they were living, God was known primarily as a withdrawn God, God that wasn't doing anything. There's no miracles. He wasn't speaking through prophets. He was just silent and inactive. And but they held out hope that God would act one more time by sending his Messiah to do what? Restore Israel to its greatness again. And so when Jesus came and said and did what he did, he was introducing God to them in a way that they didn't know him. The God that was a seeking God, that was seeking out sinners. And again, like I said, this is totally foreign to their thinking. You know, another thing that as I read this story, it speaks to me is that not only was he revealing God as a God who was a seeker, Jesus was even seeking those that didn't have a prayer. Maybe we could get there and say, yeah, okay, God's seeking the righteous. But Jesus was saying, no, he's actually seeking those who didn't have a prayer. How do we know this? Well, who did he call out? Zacchaeus. Who was Zacchaeus? He was a chief tax collector, and he was wealthy. Two strikes against him. Now, how many of you have friends that are tax collectors? I hope there's no tax collectors here. One of them might be. I'm sure there's some really good, nice tax collectors. But, you know, our basic when we hear tax collector, we don't have these warm feelings, right? We probably fear, you know, rises up in us. Well, even the worst tax collector in our day couldn't hold a candle to what this was. These were exploiters. These were people that, for any reason that they wanted, they could go to your house and exact taxes and collect from you, and they could totally ruin your life if they wanted to. And so people were afraid of them. They were intimidated by them. They were ruthless. They were dishonest. That was a tax collector. Now, the chief tax collector, which Zacchaeus was kind of like the Bernie Madoff of the day. They had this pyramid scheme, and he actually he just sat back and collected money. He got a cut of every tax collector that was there. When they'd go out and get stuff from people, he would sit back and just collect money. And so that's why he was wealthy. It wasn't so much that he was wealthy that was bad, it's how he got wealthy. And so this guy was pretty bad. And so this was the model that Jesus was putting out there of the kind of person that God is seeking, you know. And but Zacchaeus represented to the Jews somebody that actually had no hope of being righteous. This was the kind of person that would never, ever turn to God. And he would represent those that we've written off. And I just want to invite us to think about it this morning. Who are those people in your life that are the Zacchaeuses or the chief tax collectors or the people that we think don't stand a chance of ever having a relationship with Jesus? Do you have those kind of people in your life? Or do you have a perspective of maybe whole groups of people that we think are just, God would never have anything to do with them. Maybe they're people with certain lifestyles. Maybe they're people certain geographical areas or nationalities, whatever. Or it could be specific people that maybe you've invested in and you've invested in and you've invested in, and they've burnt you and burnt you and burnt you, and finally you've written them off. They're dead to you. This is who Zacchaeus represented to the Jews. So just kind of hold that in your mind, like, oh yeah, these people, that person, it's like a Zacchaeus to you. Another thing that this speaks to me is that I see in the story is that, you know, Jesus didn't wait to be asked. And this is kind of different even for me from how I think about Jesus sometimes. It says, when Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today. Now, that is just weird because everybody's afraid of Zacchaeus. They were intimidated by him. And it was considered extremely rude to invite yourself to somebody's house in that culture. It's kind of like that here. But especially in that culture, it was like you didn't ever do that. Especially to somebody like Zacchaeus, you know, who could really mess your life up. But Jesus didn't care. He didn't really even ask. He told Zacchaeus that he must come to his house today. You know, I grew up being taught that Jesus was a gentleman. He was always a gentleman. And I remember the picture that they would show us of Jesus knocking on the door, you know. And of course, that's the scripture out of Revelation. Jesus knocks on the door. But they would point out there's no doorknob on the outside. You have to let him in from the inside because he's a gentleman. He's not going to force his way in. Well, after knowing Jesus for whatever it is, 40-something years now, I'm thinking, yeah, sometimes he just kicks the door down. He's not always a gentleman. Why? Because he has a passion for the lost. And he will do whatever it takes to recapture the hearts of those that got away. His love is so great. There's a new song that Jeremy Riddle wrote, His Love is Furious. You know, and I think it speaks to this character of Jesus. It's not just this little gentle, you know, sit back and just wait for people to come to him kind of thing. No, he's a pursuer. And so Jesus wasn't intimidated by Zacchaeus. Why? Because he wanted to recapture Zacchaeus' heart. And so as I read this, I began to reflect on it. I don't know why God's asking me so many questions these days, but misery loves company, so I'm going to make you ask these questions. Are you comfortable in the presence of the unrighteous and the ungodly? Now, some of you, you know, you're really new to this whole thing of following Jesus, and you don't even know what I'm talking about, and that's great. Don't change. But some of us have been Christians so long, and I woke up one day and realized, you know what? I don't want to ever interact with people that aren't Christians. And then when I think about settings where I was with people that weren't Christians, I felt really uncomfortable, like I didn't fit. And there's like this anxiety and this fear that worked in me, like, oh, I hope they don't do something that where like it rubs off on me or I... You know, really, I live like greater is he that's in them than he that was in me. And Jesus said the opposite. Jesus was not afraid. He would hang out with sinners. He would hang out with people that were demonized. He would hang out with lepers. You know, you notice he was never uncomfortable around the untouchables. And over the last 10 years or so of my life, I have just loved hanging out with people that weren't Christians. Honestly, they're a lot more fun sometimes. Okay, a lot of times. You know, Christians, we can really be weird. Especially when we've been withdrawn for so long. And it's so refreshing. And I'm not kidding. It's got, you know, before we turned over our church, you know, I would say, look, guys, we got to be intentionally ignorant. You got to get stupid. And let's not go out there like we have all the answers. And you know, when we started doing that, you know who we learned from the most? The people that we thought didn't know anything. The people that we thought needed us to figure it all out. I mean, I would sit there. God would just keep just busting my heart with things that the people that weren't church people and stuff like that would just begin saying. They had no idea how profound It was. And I went to school. I went back to school, and God started teaching me through the most unlikely sources. It's a great way to live. And so, Jesus didn't wait to be asked. And for that matter, another thing is that he didn't wait until they came to him. You know, I used to wonder, why didn't Jesus build a temple? I mean, it could have been so successful. It could have been the first mega church. He could have been worldwide, you know. He didn't keep regular office hours, like, you know, I'm in during these hours. If you want to talk to me, come seek me out. He was always going. He was always going out, you know. He didn't even hang out at Starbucks, which is kind of a preacher joke for me. You know, a lot of pastors go and they do go to Starbucks to hang out during the day or to work on their message so they can be with the unchurched, but it's full of preachers. So it's kind of the irony of it. So. But, you know, if you look at the ministry of Jesus, it's clear that he did not make the statement, you have to come to me, you have to seek me out if you want to get right with God. Jesus made house calls. He was always going to where the object of his mission was. He went to their turf and hung out where they hung out, and he was comfortable in doing it. And that's challenging to a lot of us as Christians. How are we doing that today? And you know, two things happened when he did this, and I think it's the same for us today. One is it made the religious folks mad. Where would you have to go to make the religious folks like say about you like they did Jesus? Oh, he's hanging out at fill in the blank, sinners or whatever. And I'm not saying, I know there's places still that I would not feel comfortable going for obvious reasons. But still we got to look at, you know, it says all the people saw this and began to mutter, he has gone to be the guest of a sinner. How unrighteous. But the second thing that happens is that it blew the Zacchaeuses of the world away. And I really believe a spiritual transaction took place when Jesus looked up. He called Zacchaeus by his name. He said, come down right now. I must go to your house. I think the love of God just invaded his heart. And it just grasped him. And I think he was just undone. I think his heart melted. Right there, the love of God just incinerated him, incarcerated him. You know, there's something very Jesus-like that happens when we go and hang out with people that don't expect the righteous to hang out with them. And it's genuine, and we love them. And this is what was happening here. I think Jesus didn't give a flip what the religious people thought at that moment. Why? He had a passion for the lost. He came to find and to seek and to recapture the heart of those that were far away from God and they got away. And sometimes we have to choose who we're going to tick off. Or who we're going to alienate, or whether we're going to follow Jesus and go where he goes, you know. I don't know how familiar you are with this language. I know probably if you go into some of the classes here, the Vineyard has used some sociological language to help define our approach to church. And so, you know, John Wimber used to talk about a bounded set and a centered set. I don't know if you've talked about this on Sunday morning at all, but yeah, okay, good. But anyway, you know, the bounded set is like if you draw a circle, you've drawn a boundary, and that circle defines whether you're in or whether you're out. You know, you're in or you're out. And so often the church has been that way. If you believe these things, you're in. If you don't, you're out. If you do these things, you're in. Or if you don't do these things, you're in. If not, you're out. And it's just very clear cut. But John Wimber envisioned the church being more like a centered set where Jesus and the kingdom of God were the center and people that were in different places in relationship to him were moving towards him. So it wasn't always real clear, am I in or am I out? I don't know, but I'm beginning to follow Jesus. And you can see this in the Gospels, you know, where Jesus came and did ministry and people started following him and stuff like that. And it's been interesting because the fruit of this is that people feel comfortable in church when it's not. I mean, in Clear Lake, we didn't mean to do this. I think I've shared this before, but we could have hung up a sign that says, hey, when you get your act together, come join us. Because broken people would come in, and we had this kind of facade of having our act together when it wasn't true, but it looked like it, and they didn't feel comfortable because we weren't being real and we weren't showing our brokenness. And God broke us as a church. And that's a whole other story. And then all of a sudden our church started filling up with broken people. It was so fun. It really was. I'd much rather deal with people that were, you know, strung out on cocaine or something like that than... I don't mean to offend anybody, but self-righteous older Christians that were complaining about the color we painted the wall. It was a lot more fun. And so you have this like center set thing because it's kind of like, hey, no, we're all screw-ups looking to Jesus for our righteousness. Some have walked longer than others, but we're all headed the same way. Well, I've actually, as I reflect on the story, came up with a new sociological term, which don't try to copy it because I'm going to copyright this one and make $1 million or something so I can give it to Christian's church here. I call it the sent-out set because when you look at Jesus, I mean, the centered set, it looks like Jesus is static, you know, and we're all moving towards him. But Jesus isn't static at all. He's always going. So, as soon as we think we haven't figured out, this is what Jesus does. He goes somewhere where we least expect him to go. He goes and hangs out with these people, goes and does this. And so we're desperately trying to keep up. If we're followers of Jesus, we're trying to keep up with him. Like I said earlier, we're trying to do what we see Jesus doing or get in on what we see Jesus doing. Well, that sounds easy, but only when we can really figure out what Jesus is doing and where he's going and what he's getting on. So we develop eyes and ears to discern what Jesus is doing. And I don't know why I had this picture. You remember the little kind of toy thing where there was a guy's face and all these little metal particles, and then you had the magnet and you could draw a beard on them and stuff. But you know, everywhere that magnet went, all these particles would like follow him. You know, it's kind of like we're attracted to Jesus and we're trying to stay connected to him as he goes around. So I'm not so sure it isn't kind of like that, but I don't know how all that fits in. But anyway, the idea is that they didn't come to him. He was always going out somewhere, and his followers. We're going out too. Well, another thing that I see in this that I think we really get backwards and it makes a big difference is that in this story we see that righteous actions, becoming righteous, follow real faith. Real faith doesn't come because of righteous actions. And don't we flip that around a lot of times? Why is it that we so often require people to live a righteous lifestyle who have never been transformed by the love of Jesus? They've never had a relationship with him. And yet we kind of get this air about us that they should act this way or they shouldn't do that. I mean, whole groups of people, we get our feathers ruffled and incensed that this law might be passed and that. And I think we should do everything we can to influence things towards godliness. But when there begins developing in our heart kind of a hatred and just this ugly attitudes towards people that have never had the love of God shed abroad in their heart. I mean, who among us became righteous in our own strength? But when Jesus came in and he just melted our heart with his love, and we began being transformed, and day in and day out, he's making us more and more in his image. But, you know, we're never there. We're never complete. We still mess up. And this is the case here. Jesus didn't require Zacchaeus. He didn't say, Zacchaeus, if you'll commit to doing this, if you'll stop ripping people off, if you do this, then I'll come to your house today. We do that sometimes. I remember growing up after I became a Christian, I was just obnoxious my early Christian days. And if somebody did something wrong or if they like used profanity in front of me, I would let them know that they used ungodly language in front of a godly person. And you know how wrong that would be. You know, you can't say that in front of me. I'm a Christian. Well, you know, that's kind of weird. How do you think that made them feel? But sometimes we do that. We're kind of like, I'm a Christian. Don't do that around me, you know. And, you know, so we kind of like, we require people to act certain ways and do certain things because of us, you know. But have you noticed here that Jesus didn't do anything with that? He said, I'm coming to your house today without you doing anything. But did you notice what happened after the love of Jesus kind of transforms Zacchaeus? What was his first response? Righteousness. His heart was transformed. Immediately, the spirit of generosity came on him. Isn't that funny how Jesus' love just makes us so generous? We've been given much, so we want to give much. The law didn't even require Zacchaeus to do what he did. I think the payback, restitution, I think it was double. I think the law said double. He said, no, I want to give it back four times. If I've ripped anybody off, I want to give it back four times, and I want to give half of my thing. Jesus wasn't asking him to do that. It was a natural response to faith happening in his heart. All of a sudden, he wanted to do that. And I'm telling you, righteousness works a whole lot better when it's something that's motivated inside by the Holy Spirit. As a pastor, I finally just got worn out trying to motivate unmotivated people to do certain things or not to do certain things. It was futile. How can we do anything without the power of the Spirit and the love of Jesus to come and make us want to do it? And it's so much fun when that happens. So, another thing I see here is that, and this is powerful, is that even a dirty, rotten, disowned sinner can still get back into the family. When Jesus said to Zacchaeus, he said, today salvation has come to this house because this man too is a son of Abraham. That everyone there knew exactly what he's saying. Son of Abraham was Hebrew for in the family. And can you imagine how powerful it is? I mean, with this context that I'm setting up, chief tax collector and Jesus said, today salvation has come. You're in the house of Abraham. You're back in the family. And there's a clock. It's supposed to be done when? 11:45?
Hours.
Okay, good. And so this story tells us that there's always still room in the family for anyone. So let's be careful who we write off. And then the last thing I see in this is that Jesus is all about recapturing those who got away. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save what was lost. Don't we see this all throughout the Gospels? Jesus said, you know, the good shepherd leaves the 99 to go after that one that got away. The father, his son that rebelled and ran off. I love that line that says, and when he was yet far away, that's why I like this telescope picture. You know, you can see the father and he's seeking. He said, when the son was yet far away, he saw him. And he picked up his robes and he ran with open arms to embrace him. He's seeking out. He's looking. He came to seek and to save that which was lost. Jesus' mission was to go out and find and win and recapture those who had gotten away over the years and restoring them to the family. You know, even the whole picture, it's just all over the place. When you read the Bible with these lenses, I mean, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. And so, I think this story tells us that if we are to be real, authentic followers of Jesus, one of the main things it's saying is we can't be people with contempt for those that aren't Christians yet. But it's also saying it's not enough just to not have contempt in our hearts for those outside of the community of Jesus. It has to be more than that. So often what we do is, okay, I won't have contempt, I will tolerate. And not a popular word, toleration, we must be tolerant. But you know, that doesn't work for me. If you were estranged from the family and all of a sudden you're you're back in the family and the brothers and sisters are saying, yeah, come and eat with us. We'll tolerate you. Yeah, that makes you feel real warm and fuzzy, doesn't it? You know, yeah, come on, we'll tolerate you guys. I don't think that's, Jesus wasn't saying, Zacchaeus, I must come to your house today. I'll tolerate you today. And yeah, that's not the good news. Toleration's not enough. Because when we grasp the heart of Jesus the seeker, or better yet, when Jesus the seeker grasps our heart, we move beyond a mere toleration of the lost to a deep love and compassion for them, just like Jesus has. And it becomes the overriding mission of our life. I can't tell you how many pastors, including myself, it took me 15 years of ministry to understand the heart of Jesus and the gospel, what the real gospel message was. Many of you know Phil Johnson at the Kenner Vineyard. We know Phil and Deb from way back, and I remember us going to meetings when his church was still really small, and he would just pour out his heart. I want to reach more people. I want to grow. I just don't know how. And then all of a sudden, he had some very unfortunate and hard to deal with situations in his family with his own kids, and it broke his heart. But you know what happened in the midst of his heart being broken? He got in touch with God the Father's heart that's broken over those that are estranged and lost. And I'll tell you, from that, I remember him coming and sharing that. And I remember from that day on, all of a sudden, them people coming in that were lost and estranged and the church growing like crazy. It was because of this transformation of our heart. And so, you know, when this happens, it becomes greater than our careers, greater than our hobbies. It becomes greater than our stuff or our pursuit for more stuff. It becomes even greater than our families, because that's what Jesus is all about. And if he's the center and we're following him. So, you know, we have to ask the question, what would a church look like that was seeking those who Jesus is seeking? And I think you guys are well on your way. I love hearing Christmas stories. I love that you guys are right here in this area where you're not cloistered somewhere and you're going out and doing stuff. I don't know if you know this or not, but your pastor has been seen in bars playing music. I mean, he is hanging out with sinners. I don't know if I'd keep the guy. I mean, so why don't we stand? I don't know this morning, you know, if there's anyone here, but I'm going to pray as if there was. But if there's not, I want you to join me in praying for maybe people that, your neighbors, people you work with, people you come in contact with, that God may be laying on your heart. And here's the thing. What I want to pray is that God would tune us into who he's seeking. And we get a hold of his heart, and all of a sudden we end up with a love for certain people that we never had before, or at a depth that we didn't before. And let's just pray that would happen and give us eyes to see those that Jesus is seeking. Father, we thank you for your love. We thank you for sending your son to introduce us to who you really are. We thank you that you look for us and you seek us and you come running and you embrace us. You meet us in our weakness. You meet us in our sin. You meet us in our brokenness. Jesus, there may be one or two here this morning that is not aware that you're seeking them today. The fact that they're here is part of you seeking them and drawing them here. Lord, may they know this morning in such a real way that you love them and that you are after them and you won't let up. And then, Lord, give us a heart, your heart, for those that you've placed us in the middle of, that you're seeking after. Lord, may your love be winsome. May your love be transformational. Use us, we pray, O Lord. Amen.